You're listening to episode 246 of Women Worldwide. Community and diversity, they go hand in hand. You can take the power of community and diversity into everything that you do. I've got a guest today who takes community and diversity to a whole new level into her corporate catering business. So stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you for showing up every single week and for amplifying the stories of the amazing guests who come on the show. You know, they are sharing their journeys, the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, sometimes even the ugly. And it's all to help you because we know you have obstacles. Life gets crazy. It's a very noisy landscape out there. You have challenges, whether it's business or home or friendships, whatever it is. Our guests, they share advice. They're here to empower and inspire. And we're hearing that it's helping you to fuel your passion and to power up your own voice. And you know our mission? It's to change lives one story at a time. Okay, so let's get started with today's topic and special guest. The topic is the power of community and diversity. Now, we know there are a lot of different ways to bring diversity into a community. And my special guest today takes diversity into corporate catering. So joining me on the show is Deepti Sharma, and she's actually the CEO and founder of Food to Eat. That's foodtoeat.com, which is a marketplace for corporate catering. And their mission is better catering for bigger causes. Deepti is an entrepreneur. She's a mother. And she is a small business champion. She's also a mentor, and she serves or has served on a number of advisory boards. Now, I can say a lot about Deepti, but I really think it's better that she shares her journey with you. So, Deepti, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and I'm really excited for today's conversation.
Yeah, I am too, because we hear a lot about diversity and how we need diversity in the workplace. And you take diversity to a different level. And it's almost, you know, tell us a little bit about how you got to the launch of Food to Eat and why this company now?
Yeah, so I'm going to take it a little bit further back than like when I started. For me, community has always been important. I grew up in New York, in Queens, and I went to a middle school where they allowed us to have community service was a part of our curriculum. So we, once a week, would spend our time volunteering. And I specifically was working with kids that were disabled. So kids that had cerebral palsy, and they were having seizures in front of me. And
oh my.
Yeah. And it, you know, at the age of like 10, I mean, I was 11, 12, 13. This was from fifth to eighth grade where we were doing this. And it really just like got to me, like, what can I do? These were kids that were in the same socioeconomic background as myself that had no control over, you know, what they were born into. And they had these disabilities. And to me, I saw that they were just amazing kids that just didn't have the opportunity to do the same things as I could. So I feel like whenever I think about what brought me to where I am today, I always look at that time in my life as such a critical point for me. I got to high school. I thought, you know, what can I do again, like to give back to community? I was great at science and math, but I didn't really want to become a doctor. And then I got to college where I got a liberal arts education and I had the ability to pick and choose what I wanted to learn. And I always loved history, and I chose political science as my major. And I spent most of my college career working in political campaigns because I chose a candidate that I believed in at the time and, you know, worked for them, worked with them to get them elected so that they could create, you know, the possible change that we need in a community to advocate for them. And so that's where my love for community really started. And it transformed into this love for politics, which slowly then led me to where I am today. So post-college, I thought my next natural progression would be law school.
Right.
I worked in politics, but I also graduated in 2008, which if you remember, 10 years ago was a pretty bad time to graduate. People, you know, there was a financial crisis. College graduates weren't really getting jobs. We had a recession. And I thought, well, if I go to law school, it's a 3-year break from not having to deal with, you know, like looking for a job. But when I graduate, I don't think that it'll be that easy to get a job either, right? And I found myself, while I was studying for my LSATs, I found myself waiting in line for a food truck. And I waited, and for 30 minutes, and all I got was a peanut butter cookie.
Oh, and gosh, that's a long wait for a peanut butter cookie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And for me, what was interesting was I spent all this time waiting. There has to be a better way to access this food truck. Why is this the only way? Me standing in line, paying cash, and then walking away. So when I first started Food to Eat, I, you know, started talking to a ton of these food truck and cart owners, and I said that they didn't see themselves as business owners. They didn't market themselves. They didn't give their business a name, yet they were serving different kinds of chicken and rice or falafel from the next person, or from the next cart rather. So why didn't they differentiate their imagery, right? Their stock, they all use the same stock images. Why didn't they change what they were doing and how they were presenting their business? And that's where like the core of the business really started, was just the people I was talking to were immigrants. They were, you know, black and brown people. They were, you know, people that reminded me of myself and my family. Sure. And so that's what really led me to want to start a business for the food community in New York City, which, you know, again, slowly led me to think about our branding and our storytelling and how we incorporated that into our messaging. But today, as you mentioned, you know, Food to Eat started off as an online ordering platform for food trucks and carts, a very consumer-driven business. And then it transformed into what we do today, which is focusing on corporate catering. And there's a story to the pivot, but I'm sure we may get to that later.
Yeah, no, I definitely want to hear about the pivot. And as a matter of fact, maybe you could share... Did you find, first of all, your passion for community is wonderful and it's great what you're doing. And I love that you know, every entrepreneur with his or her story is solving a problem, and you were experiencing a problem and you figured out a way to solve it. So kudos to you. Were there any challenges moving from the consumer and what you were doing with the food truck community to shifting over into corporate catering? Because it's a whole new world.
Yeah. I mean, so there was a lot of reasons why we pivoted, right? I didn't even come to this realization till recently that this was one of the reasons, but I actually finally started the business in 2011. And I thought about the numbers, right? So today, less than 2% of venture money goes to women. And if you think about that, what that's like for women of color, it's even less. I also didn't go to an Ivy League, so I didn't have a plug into a community built in for me. But I never thought about this when I was actually going around fundraising. Like, it was near impossible to fundraise for me. I was a sole founder, a woman of color who, again, like, didn't go to an Ivy League school. So all of these things were things that I was being looked at about. And I was getting asked questions like, you know, when are you planning on having children? And, you know, like, do you have a co-founder? Why don't you have a co-founder? And, you know, I know like most single sole co-founders probably get asked that question of like, would you consider having one? But it was just like such a bulk of questions that I kept getting asked. And then I looked at the industry. Every single food tech consumer business was run and co-founded by a male. And that I thought was interesting. Like, why are there no females entering this landscape? And why am I having so much trouble? And we were doing well. We got great press. We had a lot of good things happening. But that was one of the many reasons why we decided to pivot, along with, you know, people were placing orders at food trucks. And they loved the fact they could skip a line, pay by credit card, and just go back to their desk. But what was also happening at the time was Mayor Bloomberg was instilling rules and regulations where food trucks weren't allowed to vend and sell in certain parking spots. So a customer would place an order, the food truck would get kicked out by a cop in that neighborhood, and then the consumer had a bad experience of not receiving any food or even really being able to get notified. And the food trucks don't have enough time to tell us or communicate. They just were like, we have to get out. I don't want to get a ticket.
Sure.
And so that led us to really figure out, well, if the consumer part isn't working, what else can we do? And at the time we thought, well, let's consider, you know, onboarding restaurants. Let's jump into the consumer space.
And just to interject, that right there is such a hard decision, because you were shifting and thinking ahead almost. You know, it's hard for leaders sometimes when you're going down a path and it's not working to make that shift, but you did. So
bravo. Yeah, I mean, it took me a few years. It didn't happen so naturally, but also, like, you know, I thought, okay, we're working with food trucks. Let's, you know, to be a bigger marketplace, let's add restaurants. We saw that third-party services were charging up to 30% every single time a consumer placed an order. I thought that was ridiculous, because the restaurant margins are less than 10%. How are we going to charge them that much and allow them to actually sustain and grow as a business? And so we wanted to be the Robin Hood of the space. And again, it was hard because we signed up to 900 restaurants, but which was a lot, but we needed more, because if we were going to compete with the Seamless and the Grubhubs, we needed to be able to get well into the thousands, and you need resources, you need team. And, it was a lot. And then, you know, consumers just didn't care enough, our marketing to them, of telling them, like, hey, you know, your local restaurant can shut down because they are unable to pay these high fees, wasn't enough for them to make a switch. Because at the end of the day, people care about convenience. People care about what, and this isn't me being like cynical. This is me telling you through our experience of
the way it is.
Yeah, it's just the way it is. We were putting things out there. Like, our marketing was suggesting all of this, or, you know, we made videos, but again, it wasn't enough. And so I knew I wanted to continue down this path of working with food vendors in New York City, whether they were food trucks or restaurants. But I wanted to do something bigger and better. And the more I started talking to our restaurants and food trucks that we were working with, we realized catering. It's the holy grail of the industry. It's the easiest way for them to make money. And that is where we just started testing the market and seeing, would we be able to charge clients to book them a catering opportunity? You know, would we be able to charge the restaurant and charge the corporate company to be able to facilitate these orders?
Wow.
So, yeah.
It worked.
It worked. Yeah. I mean, it worked. We started off with, Tumblr being one of our first clients, where we were selling, what were we doing for them? Every summer, once a week, we had a food truck outside of their office. And that was what helped us. And then we said, hey, you know, we also work with restaurants. We can do your catering throughout the year. And so why not work with us for your weekly team meals? And that's where we really started picking up. And
sure,
at that phase, we still wanted to be consumer and B2B. And that was an issue, because you can't do it all, especially when your funds are so limited.
Right.
So we really had to pick one and, you know, do one thing and do it well. And the motto is so true, because it's necessary to be able to master that one thing so that you can do other things when the time is right and necessary.
Oh my gosh. Well, you picked the right, the right way to go. No doubt. You mentioned team. And I'm just curious, how do you select your team? What sort of folks do you put around you so that you can all succeed?
Yeah. I mean, so I was not really good at team building in the beginning. I remember I had a lot of turnover when it came to sales, because initially I was just hiring people based off of the fact whether they had sold something or not. And I realized that wasn't the best way to hire. The best way to hire is actually being able to sell myself and our mission, right, and what we want to accomplish, and seeing, do these people that I'm hiring care about what I care about? Do they care about
the passion?
Exactly. Do they care about the food community? Do they care about helping them build their businesses and scale them, as opposed to just like seeing how many orders can we push their way? And, you know, just those basic things that salespeople think about. And when I started realizing that I wasn't selling the mission, and frankly, they didn't care, I realized I was doing the wrong thing. And so that's when I changed my strategy. I also like would always ask this question, if there was one thing that I could remember you by, if we never met again, what's the one thing you want me to know about you? That question always left an impression on me, because I wanted to be able to work with people that I enjoyed working with, and had something interesting to say about themselves, frankly. But at the end of the day, you know, as one of my mentors told me, hire experts, hire people that are smarter than you.
Always.
And you don't want to work with yourself. You know, you want to work with somebody that has the ability to have a mastery in something else that you don't, so that they can help you build upon that.
Excellent. I love that question that you asked.
Yeah.
I think everybody watching and listening should ask that question. It's really important. Deepti, I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts just for a moment. We're going to shift our focus over to the sponsor of today's episode, which is the Empowered Women event that's taking place in San Francisco on December 5th. And women from across the country are going to be on stage sharing their authentic stories about their experience in business and how equity matters. So before I give some more information about the event, Deepti, you're a champion of women's small business diversity. I'd love for you to answer this question. How can women help one another? Because we know equity matters.
Mm-hmm. So I say this all the time, and I think the most important thing is we need to buy from each other. It's not enough to just say, we, you know, you have a great business, you're doing so well, I'm encouraging you, I'm here for you. That doesn't help my business move forward. So I think the number one thing is buy from women-owned businesses.
I love that. And I agree with you. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, everyone, if you want to participate in the Empowered Women event that's taking place on December 5th in San Francisco, I'm going to be sharing a link, but just so you know, some of the speakers that are showing up, for example, Dr. Deborah Tannen, she's the author, best-selling author of You're the Only One I Can Tell. She'll be there speaking. We have Pat Gillette, who is giving a keynote, and Pat is a motivational keynote speaker who really focuses on diversity and women's issues in business. And just in all transparency, I'm going to be there too. So I'll be speaking. I think I'm kicking off the morning, and I'll be sharing a new communication model based on research that I've done for about a year, and it's called FEEL. Face your fears, engage with empathy, use ethics and good judgment, and unleash the love of your vision. Women, we have a natural tendency to feel, and we need to embrace that. So, Deepti, thank you for sharing your answer. And anybody who wants to find out more about the event, you can see the link in the show notes page, and you're also going to find it in the YouTube description. I'll say it. It's http://bit.ly/empoweredDEC for December 5. So hope you all join us on December 5th in San Francisco for the Empowered Women event. Thank you. A big thank you to the organizers for this event and for sponsoring this episode of Women Worldwide. Okay, Deepti, let's go back into our discussion. We were talking about teams, how you made the shift over to the corporate catering. So maybe you might share some aha moment where you learned something about yourself along your journey that maybe surprised you. Any thoughts on that?
Probably a lot of things were learned along the way. I mean, it's the, I don't know. I mean, I think one of the most important things that I've learned is just resilience, and knowing that I can make it through anything I set my mind to. You know, it sounds pretty cliche, but it's true. I think a lot of times we start doubting ourselves that, you know, because we haven't done something that, you know, something new that came up in a certain situation, like pitching to a Fortune 500 company. You know, I remember when we first thought about expanding, which we ended up not doing because we weren't in the right place and time to do it. But I remember going and flying out to Chicago to this really large agency and had the ability to pitch to their top executives. And they absolutely loved it. They loved everything we did, you know, that we presented. But at the end of the day, we just weren't ready. And that was a learning experience of, you know, that everything happens for a reason. You get the opportunity to pitch, but just because you don't get it doesn't mean you've lost. You won by just being there and being in the room. And what I really learned was that, like, you know, just because we didn't get it doesn't mean that we are failing at our business or we're not succeeding or we're not on a path to be able to be successful and grow and whatnot. So it's that resilience of, like, having lost these deals that I put so much work and effort in, is that I'm bigger and better than this and I can kind of bring myself up. You know, I remember for that pitch, one of the reasons why something didn't work was they were testing out our services in New York. And this is like year one of us, like, trying to do corporate catering within, like, I think the first 6 months. And
early on.
Yeah. And, you know, the restaurant that we were working with, instead of going to 300 Park Avenue, they went to 300 Park Avenue South. Oh. And that led them to be 35 minutes late. And they were feeding people from, you know, the Today Show. And it was just, you know, it was like a big moment for us to be able to shine. And that, you know, it was our first shot to, like, prove ourselves. And they were like, nope, can't do it. And I was like, but it wasn't our fault. We put all the right information. Right. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter everything that I did right. What mattered was the one thing that went wrong. And it's tough to be in the business that we are because we don't always have so much control over everything that happens because we're not the ones making and delivering the food. Sure. We're the ones facilitating the orders, right?
Right, so, and relying on partners.
Yeah, exactly.
The puzzle coming together.
Yeah, and so that led us to come up with solutions that would rectify issues right when they happen, right? So now if a, you know, vendor or restaurant that we work with messes up an order, we have a 2-strike policy. If you mess up twice, you're out. We don't go to the third. And the first one, if it's as big as this, where we lose a client, then we also have to kind of remediate them and then say, like, we need you to work on these few things before you can come back on our platform and service our clients. Right. So it's just, you know, that resilience factor is always, like, knowing that failure is just a part of entrepreneurship. It's just a part of life. You know, forget entrepreneurship. It's part of life.
Yeah, embrace it.
And you have to embrace it. And you have to just figure out a way to get through it, whether that's talking to other entrepreneurs, talking to a therapist, or reading a book that might help you figure out how to sell better or how to create procedures within your organization that don't allow these, you know, mishaps to happen very often.
Sure.
It's just figuring out what works for you as a founder, as an entrepreneur, to, like, push through those failures.
Right.
So
I think what I hear you say is it's not beating yourself up, mm-hmm. and realizing this is a part of the growth,
yeah,
which can only fuel you forward. How about your team? Are they able to be resilient? Does that come from you as the role model helping them? Do they take it really hard?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they do. It's only natural, right? We've had mess ups happen internally because we are handling a lot. And, you know, my job is to just say, yes, you messed up.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
Right.
It's not the end of the world. And always come with a solution to a client, right? Say, for example, something, you know, we had 50 orders being placed in one day and we forgot to place one, right? It's a very rare occurrence, but it's
happened. It happens.
And because we're human. And so I've said, listen, like, instead of saying to the client, like, we're sorry, this is what happened, you go back in and say, here's what we can do. Here's what I can offer you right now. And so we try to be as solutions driven as possible. And sometimes there is no solution. And right. The only way to go to a client and say that you messed up is by saying, I am extremely sorry. And here's how we can make it up in the future. If you just give us a chance.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Exactly. It should always be followed by what are the steps you're going to take to make it better. And I think that's what companies appreciate. People appreciate.
Yeah. And sometimes it doesn't work and you just have to accept that too. And that's the end of the day, right? At the end of the day, like, we're all human and we react a certain way because of our own experiences. And it's just what it is. So at the end of the day, I just want our team to feel confident that everything that they're doing is the best at the best of their abilities. And, you know, they all take it to heart and personally when something doesn't go right. But I also say, like, it's okay. And so as a leader, I want to be able to portray that it's okay to mess up and to fail because it's the only way they'll grow. If I immediately start firing everyone that messes up, I won't have anybody.
Well, it's refreshing the vulnerability. I mean, I think that the more the transparency, the vulnerability really helps people to embrace and to care. And to invest more of themselves. I'm doing a lot of research on millennials. And, you know, one of the things that establishing an environment of trust means that the leader has to show transparency and vulnerability, and that helps your company grow. So clearly, you are doing this.
Trying.
Now, I mentioned, I mentioned in the introduction that you're an entrepreneur, you're also a mom, you're a mentor, you're doing a... You know, of course, run a business. How are you managing your time and just getting everything done so you feel good about yourself and the people around you at the end of the day?
Yeah, I mean, I won't lie. Some days I don't do it all. Some days I am left sitting at the end of the night just being like, holy shit, like what?
What
is happening? You know, and how do I bring myself together? But I try to do three things. I try to prioritize three things every quarter or every 6 months. And those three things are children, family, work right now for me. And they have been this entire year, honestly, because we have two little ones. I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old.
Oh my gosh, that's little.
Yeah. And my husband and I started a second business together. And so for both of us, it's just that it's those three things. Our friends are on a bit of a back burner. We make time for them when we can. And, you know, we'll probably see them 4 times this year as opposed to 8 times this year. But
sure,
that's where we're at in our lives and just being very unapologetic about it. Mm-hmm. When I was even a little bit younger, a year or two ago, I think I would just feel bad and, you know, say like, apologize for not being there enough for certain people or meeting certain, you know, people that were coming up to me after an event that I was speaking at saying like, hey, I really need help with X, Y, and Z. And I'd say, hey, this is the capacity that I can help you with. I cannot meet in person. I can do a quick 20-minute phone call or send me an email with your questions. And if I can answer them or connect you with someone that can, I will. So I just am, I try to be as strict as possible with those three things and just try to stick to it and not stray away from it. Even speaking engagements, I've stopped doing things that don't pay me because my time is worth money. And I used to say like, you know, it's just good to get out there, be a part of the community. And I've done that a lot. I've spent the last 8 years doing that where I gave a lot of my time. And now it's important to say, I have to get paid for this. Or you're paying for all expenses that I incur trying to make it to your event. Because I can be spending time on my business or my kids. And that is, you know, really important as a business owner to really put yourself first and the priorities that you have, because we sometimes think like, oh, I need to help blah, blah, and blah. And it's like, okay, then join a mentorship program. So it's more structured. And so you're not like just randomly giving your time to people that you meet. You know, I was a VNYC mentor. It's a initiative that's a part of the mayor's office of New York. And I loved that. It was very structured as the amount of time I was spending with mentors, with mentees. I mean, I say mentors because I was learning as well. And so I feel like I was being mentored during these sessions while I was
reverse mentoring. I love it.
Yeah. And it's really important that people realize that no matter how many years you've been in business, like there's always something to learn. You can literally learn from a 14-year-old who started a business, you know, like there is no book that can teach it all. There's lots of books that can help you along the way, but nothing that really says this is exactly what the 100% recipe to success. And if you do it right, you're going to turn out with like a beautiful banana cake or something. That's just not how it works, because there's so many factors and variables that are involved in it. So yeah, I mean, that's the main thing that I focus on is just how do I prioritize my time? And again, sometimes I stray away from it. But I make sure like, you know, that I figure out those things for myself. And so I prioritize that.
Well, it sounds like a lot of discipline. And I can't even believe that we're nearing the end of our discussion. So Deepti, this is the part of the show where I ask you to share your best advice with all the Women Worldwide Network. Maybe you can just give them a little bit of advice about how they too can power up their voices, do what they love, and really be resilient.
So I'm like trying to think of something new that I haven't said before, just because I feel like I've been going through such a different time in my life. I think just like putting yourself first is important. You know, I recently just started running again. I used to run 4 to 5 times a week. And when I had kids, I put them first. And it goes back to that balance. Just remembering that you are important, you are enough, and that is really like a mantra to like kind of go back to when you feel like you're in a bad place. And then just not accepting no for an answer from people. You know, people are just saying no when, oh, if we're not interested in investing, we're not interested in your business. Always ask why, so that you can improve and become better at, you know, the next speaking opportunity, or become better at your next sales pitch, and just improve yourself. I think it's easy to say no to someone. Asking them why is a little harder. But I always ask now, and I used to be afraid and just say, I guess it's a no, fine. I guess we have to move on. Just tell me a reason so that I can at least figure out how to push myself forward. So just more practical advice of, if you get the no's, just ask the why, and putting yourself first is really essential.
Yeah. Really great advice. Put yourself first. You are enough. And ask why. I mean, maybe the feedback might be a little difficult to hear, but what a great learning experience. Well, last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you and Food to Eat?
So I am Deepti NYC on Instagram, Deepti Sharma 1 on Twitter. And Food to Eat is just food, F-O-O-D-T-O, eat on all of our social media channels. So very easy.
Very easy. Well, I hope everybody goes and checks out foodtoeat.com and follows you on social media. Deepti, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your time, your journey, your love for community, and how you're bringing diversity to corporate catering. It's wonderful.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. And also want to thank all of you for tuning in to Women Worldwide. Please keep the feedback coming to us. You know that I love hanging out on Twitter, so you can always tweet me. I'm at Dee Breckenridge. You can follow Women Worldwide on Twitter, on Facebook. Leave a comment there. Go to YouTube, subscribe to the Deirdre Breckenridge channel, and you will get a Women Worldwide episode every single week, as well as some of the projects that I'm working on. And you can also go to the womenworldwideshow.com website to sign up for our updates so you can stay informed. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.